May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm glad to finally be here.
So are we.
This is a case of statutory construction. The sole question is whether when Social Security beneficiaries who are also eligible for Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage receive erroneous payments from the Social Security Administration, whether those beneficiaries are entitled to waiver of recovery of those erroneous payments. Plaintiffs contend that the Social Security Act waiver provision, 42 U.S.C. Section 404B, authorizes waiver in this context. The district court disagreed, holding that for this one subclass of Social Security beneficiaries, there is no right to waiver. Let me briefly reiterate what happened below and the status of the case. The Social Security Administration has authorization from Congress by statute to withhold part of Title II benefits from Social Security beneficiaries who request it, and to pay that amount as the premium, the monthly premium, for the Part D prescription drug benefit. That happened in this case correctly. The Social Security Administration withheld the benefits from the beneficiaries and paid it as the premiums, the Part D premiums, to the prescription drug plans. There's no question that that happened. It took place correctly. At all times, the prescription drug plans were in possession of their premiums. In an unrelated action, which took place shortly thereafter, the Social Security Administration mistakenly paid the same amount to about 230,000 of these beneficiaries. So we're talking about two entirely separate pots of money, one that went to the prescription drug plans and one that went to the beneficiaries. And the Social Security Administration paid both of those amounts.
What do you mean they paid it? You mean they didn't withhold it?
They did withhold, Your Honor, and they paid the money to the prescription drug plans. And then, thinking they shouldn't have done that,
paid them back.
No. No, the money stayed with the prescription drug plans, and that's critical.
No.
I'm sorry. The Social Security Administration then paid the same amount to the beneficiaries. So they're talking about two pots of money, one that went to the prescription drug plans and one that went to the beneficiaries.
Who made the mistake?
I'm not sure who made the mistake, but Social Security at some point believed that it shouldn't have withheld the money and paid the premiums.
But I saw something in the government's brief anyway that indicated it wasn't the Social Security Administration that made the error.
The government has said in a letter which was sent to the beneficiaries after this litigation began, because I don't think there's anything else in the record, that the mistake was made by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
It's HHS, right?
It's an agency of HHS, that's correct. And Social Security believed that it shouldn't have paid the premiums, therefore then paid the same amount of money to the beneficiaries. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, shortly thereafter, determined that this was a mistake and sent out a letter to the beneficiaries, said, no, this is not your money. You have to pay it back. It acknowledged in the letters that this could be a hardship for many beneficiaries, but it did not offer them the right to seek waiver of recovery.
Can I stop you? Now, who sent the first letter saying you're entitled to this, to the beneficiaries, you're entitled to this back? Was that the Social Security?
That was the Social Security.
Then HHS sends them a letter saying you've got to give it
back. You have to pay this back within the next 3 weeks.
All right.
So there are two letters within the space of about a month apart, I believe. The plaintiffs, who are two organizations and an individual beneficiary, obtained a preliminary injunction to stop the recovery of these benefits. This court stayed that order and later vacated the injunction on the grounds that the district court lacked jurisdiction over this claim under 42 U.S.C. Section 404B. On dispositive cross motions, however, the district court concluded that when the plaintiffs returned to the district court on remand, they had cured the jurisdictional defect, that therefore the district court then did have jurisdiction. At the same time, however, the district court ruled adversely to the plaintiffs on the merits, holding that under Chevron Step 1, there was no authorization for waiver under 404B in this context. And that's the posture we're now in at this appeal. The district court ruled, and this is what we object to, obviously, that under Chevron Step 1, there could not be any waiver under 404B. It's our argument that either under Chevron Step 1 or Chevron Step 2, if it is reached, the beneficiary should prevail, and there should be a right to waiver here, as in every other situation involving 404B. The district court's decision.
Do you agree we have to read 404B in conjunction with 404A, such that under this title under this subchapter applies in 404B?
No, that's my first argument, that I don't agree with that. We think there is no under this subchapter language in 404B, and the district court was importing language from 404A incorrectly. That's not what the statute says.
Wouldn't your argument then mean that 404B entitles anyone who's received a government overpayment for anything at all, veterans benefits, what have you, is entitled to a waiver provision?
Not if it was paid, no, because I think we do all agree this only deals with benefits paid by the Social Security Administration, not
the veterans. Where do you get that language from 404B?
Well, I think in the whole statute is part of Title II. So the Social Security Administration is acting pursuant to Title II.
Okay, but then you're not applying the plain language of 404B. You're agreeing, I think, in the answer you just gave me, that there has to be some structural, contextual limitation on the plain language of 404B. Is that right?
No, I disagree. I believe that the under this subchapter language is critical to understanding our argument. And the district court was importing that language into 404B. It only appears in 404A. Therefore, we don't think it's relevant whether the Social Security Administration was operating pursuant to Title II or any other section.
It also appears in the regulation implementing 404B.
I'm sorry, which does, Judge Randolph? The regulation, we argued, confirms our understanding that in this circumstance there should be waiver as in every other circumstance.
Yeah, but the regulation, which is 404.506, says under 404B, the Act provides there should be no adjustment or recovery in any case where an overpayment under Title II has been made. So the regulation reads the section entirely consistently with the government's position in this case.
If that's correct, and I had not seen the regulation stating that, if that's correct, then we reach the second part of that argument, which is even if you have 404B incorporating the under this subchapter language, the district court's ultimate conclusion that that this happened pursuant to Title 18, which is the Medicare statute instead of Title II, is inaccurate because the provisions cited by the district court deal only with the withholding of premiums and payments to the prescription drug plans. They do not deal with the payment by the Social Security Administration to the beneficiaries, which
you
then
say
took
this
place.
This is a payment under Title II? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. This is a payment under Title II.
I wondered about that, and for the life of me, can you show me where in your brief you make that argument?
Where in the brief?
The top side brief, not the reply brief, the top side brief, because I couldn't find it. I may have just missed it.
Where this is a Title II payment?
Yeah.
Well, I think it would be at page 32 of the opening.
If I look at your the table of contents and your caption section headings, I don't find it, right?
I don't know if it's in
32?
I think at page 32 we stated, and if I didn't state it clearly enough, I apologize, that it's not these actions did not take place pursuant to Title 18, and therefore the only thing it could have taken place for pursuant to was Title II. Because Title II is the operative title for the Social Security Administration. The Title 18 provisions that the district court cited are an exception to the general rule. So if the Social Security Administration is taking action pursuant to anything other than this exception, it must be acting pursuant to Title II. And the Social Security Administration in this instance thought that it was paying Title II benefits to the beneficiaries because it thought that the premiums should not have been withheld. So it thought that it had failed to pay the correct Title II benefits to the beneficiaries and therefore paid them pursuant to Title II. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I could, for rebuttal, unless there's further questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Tenney?
May it please the Court, I'm Daniel Tenney from the Department of Justice, representing the Commissioner of Social Security and the Secretary of Health and Human Services. In the last appeal in this case, this Court held that nothing in the Medicare Act provides a right to a waiver of recovery in the circumstances presented here. In this case, the district court properly concluded that the waiver provision that applies to Social Security benefits doesn't provide a waiver of recovery when there's an erroneous refund of Medicare premiums. The error in this case was made, as was discussed earlier, by the agency that administers Medicare. It determined that refunds that were due to individuals because premiums had been withheld from their Social Security benefits. The Social Security Administration's role in this scheme and its role in this case came about only because Social Security provides the mechanism to transfer funds from individuals to the plans that provide the insurance coverage, and therefore the Medicare agency called on the Social Security Administration to provide sort of logistical means to pay the funds back from the government to these individuals. The Social Security Administration didn't make an error on its own of any kind, and it certainly didn't make an error in administering Title II. The funds that were being returned here were the...
Of course, 404B doesn't say anything along the lines of what you just said, right? It just says in any case in which more than the correct amount of payment has been made.
It doesn't say so precisely in 404B, but if you read it together with 404A, 404A lays out... If I'm looking at 404A1, it says, whenever the Commissioner of Social Security finds that more or less than the correct amount of payment has been made to any person under this subchapter, and then if you flip to 404B, it's a portion of those circumstances, in any case in which more than the correct amount of payment has been made. It doesn't repeat all of the other language, but it's clearly tracking the language of 404A, and therefore...
How is the government collecting the overpayment?
The Medicare agency, Social Security, had no role in collecting the overpayment. The Medicare agency sent out a letter saying that this mistake had been made, refunds had been erroneously paid, and asked people to return the funds.
By writing a check, is that the way? But has the government been collecting any of this by deducting it from a Social Security payment?
It is not. There were a few mechanisms that were laid out to permit people to pay the money back. They could write a check to Medicare. They could authorize Medicare to deduct the money from their bank account. If they hadn't yet cashed the check that they received from the government, they could send that check voided back to the government.
But it's not using a 404A mechanism to collect the overpayment.
That's correct. And other than the funds that have voluntarily been sent back to the government hasn't taken any other action to collect the funds from the beneficiaries.
So that's still, what, $24 million?
That remains to be collected. It's somewhat less than that now. The most recent figures that I have, over $30 million of the approximately $47 million that was erroneously paid has been paid back. More than 150,000 of the 230,000 beneficiaries have now paid back the money, so more than half of the money at this point has been paid back.
Your position is, as a matter of law, the government's not required to impose or permit any hardship procedure in something like this, right?
That's correct. The government isn't required.
The government could have overpaid everyone by $2,000 and said pay it back immediately, and there's no provision of law that restricts the government and its ability to do that?
I'm not aware of a provision of law that would require the government to
It's different with Part A and Part B overpayments?
I don't believe that there's any provision of law that requires the government to... Are you talking about
yeah.
Benefits, or are you talking about premiums?
Yeah, on the premiums, I thought there was a different premium overpayments. Isn't there a provision for Part A and Part B overpayments that's the other side relies on here, saying as a matter of logic it should apply to Part D as well?
There's no statutory provision that applies to Part A and Part B premiums. The agencies charged with implementing the Social Security and Medicare programs have decided to create, under their sort of discretionary authority, a regime for Part A and Part B premiums.
I would say that's similar to the discretionary regime they created ad hoc in this case, I guess, for this particular overpayment, I guess.
You're talking about the 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. And so, the only question relating to the Part A and Part B premiums is whether there's any requirement that the agency extend that to Part D. And since, as we explained in our brief, Part D and Part A and B are very different programs, there's no reason that that should need to be extended. Unless the court has anything further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does he have? Okay.
I'd just briefly like to respond to that last exchange. I think that is the crucial aspect of the Chevron Step 2 argument that we've made, namely that there shouldn't be any deference to the agency here because this policy was created on the run without any vetting, certainly without notice and comment rulemaking. There's not even a manual provision dealing with this. The agency simply decided within a 3 or 4 week period that it would not allow waiver in this context, despite the fact waiver is permitted under Parts A and Parts B in exactly the same situation where premiums are paid and then another amount is erroneously paid to the beneficiaries.
Well, the agency still could waive repayment, right?
I mean, it could. It has the ability to, Your Honor.
But it doesn't. For example, if the government is correct, I assume they are, that they've requested each individual who received an overpayment to pay them back and write us a check or send the old check back or whatever. If the individual doesn't do that, then one recourse is to bring a lawsuit against them. And that would have to be through the U.S. Attorney's Office, which collects in civil actions. So the U.S. Attorney's Office always has prosecutorial discretion to not bring that suit. You know, if your client, the individual client, said, "Look, I've got a hardship and I don't have the money, you know, please don't sue me," government could say, "All right, we won't sue you." You can call that a waiver. You can call it prosecutorial discretion. It's just not under 404B. It's under something else.
But Judge Randolph, that would distinguish this from every other situation involving federal benefits, and especially from Parts A and B, where the right to seek waiver, not to get waiver, but to seek waiver, exists as part of the administrative process. This is the only situation where a beneficiary does not have that right to seek waiver.
In the situation that everybody agrees is covered by 404B, the situation is different because the Social Security Administration has a hammer. And the hammer is, if you don't pay us with a check, we're going to take it out of your next Social Security payment.
That's correct, Your Honor, but it still does not explain.
They're not using that here, right?
Excuse me? No, they're not using that. But that still does not explain why waiver is available. The right to seek waiver is available under Parts A and B in exactly the same situation to ask that the standards for waiver under 404B, and the manual specifically says they are following the standards under 404B, why it should be available in Parts A and B and not available in Part D. And we say there should be no deference to the agency on that because it's not notice and comment rulemaking, and they haven't presented persuasive reasons under the Skidmore test for treating the Part D beneficiaries differently.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.